Hey, everybody. We're in a very crowded green room inside Disrupt TV. We've got some amazing guests. And of course, Fala Ashraf is back. He's been on the road for 2 weeks. We're not sure where he's been, but he'll tell us more later. So this is the green room where we introduce our guests in reverse order. We ask them where they're coming in from. And of course, what are they talking about today in sound bites? So Joe and Peter, tell us where you're coming in from. I'll start with you, Peter, and then we'll go to Joe. What are we talking about today? Peter?
Coming in from the San Francisco Bay Area, talking about our company produces a show called The AI Age Begins, and it is all about the beginning stages here, the new age of AI, coming right out of San Francisco.
Very, very cool. Joe, thank you for being on the show. Come on in. What do you have? Oh, we're losing your audio. We will try that again. So see if you can come back. If you refresh the screen, come back in. We're in the green room, so we're still good to go. We'll go to Jeff. We'll go to Jim. James, go for it. Where are you coming in from, James?
Hey, I'm in Boulder, Colorado today at home. It was nice to be home on a Friday, and I'm going to talk about some of the research that we have recently run into online shopping trends, online retail trends, and the implications that has for retailers as we think about the 2024 holiday seasons.
It's a changing face of retail, definitely there, and we'll hit the future of work. Jeff, what are we talking about?
Coming to you live from Southern California, Orange County, South Orange County to be specific, looking at the ocean as we are doing this podcast. I'm going to talk about the effect of AI on, hey, what's going on with AI and how and what do I need to know?
No, it's a great topic. And we'll go back to Joe. Joe, let's check your audio. Make sure you're good to go. Oh my God, Joe, you're coming in very, very soft. Let's see if we can do anything to switch that. Let's do some troubleshooting on the back end. Go to settings, and in settings, see if you can change your audio to a different source. Maybe there'll be one option there. And we can swap out options. And we'll wait for you before we actually go live. This is the beauty of actually doing the green room. So.
Oh.
Yeah, we'll pop that in. And yeah, once we get the green room, we'll turn it back to L and we'll be good. So how are we doing, Joe? See, pop in some earpieces. So while he's doing that, the amazing background he has, it's really Shack 15. If you haven't been to Shack 15, it's one of the premier co-working spaces in San Francisco. It's kind of the center for AI and AI startups. And so they do, Peter and Joe do their show there at Shack 15. All right, testing again, Joe, how are you doing? Oh my God, we cannot hear you. So even with the headset. So, we still have time. If I would try and test again, get onto another browser, maybe that would be the other option, and we'll bring you back in from there. So, but it's Joe Baggio, so we'll see him there. All right, back to you, Al. We'll kick off the show and go from here.
All right, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us on Disrupt TV. My name is Fala Ashraf. I'm the Chief Digital Evangelist at Salesforce and your co-host for the next hour. We welcome you to follow us on X at Disrupt TV Show. It's my pleasure to introduce my co-host, Ray Wong. He's the CEO, founder of Constellation Research. He is the best-selling author of Everybody Wants to Rule the World. I see Ray on TV every day. Fox Business, Yahoo Finance, Bloomberg, CNN, CNBC. In my humble opinion, he's one of the top futures to follow on X at RWANG0. Welcome, Ray Wong, to Disrupt TV.
Hey, thanks a lot. We have Bala Ashtar, and as he mentioned, he's the chief digital evangelist for Salesforce, and he's the author of multiple books, including Boundless, A New Mindset for Unlimited Business Success, and the number one seller on Amazon, talking about business flow and organization. Executives around the world follow every one of his inspirational, insightful tweets. He's almost at 1 million followers on X. And more importantly, when he's not hosting, keynoting, or leading events at Salesforce, you can find him speaking on business TV outlets such as Bloomberg and posting insightful analyses set on ZDNet. But it's not about us. It's always about our amazing guests. And of course, who do we have to kick it off today? And we're going to talk about this and more.
It's our privilege to have Jeff Bellinger, who's a Microsoft MVP and an internationally recognized online influencer, analyst, and expert on all things Microsoft, Google Cloud, Amazon Web Services, web collaboration, enterprise social networking, and enterprise IT strategy. Jeff specializes in advising clients on migration strategies, creating a digital workplace, enterprise software, collaboration intranets, portals, and increasing employee engagement and developing world-class partnerships. With over two decades of experience, Jeff is a sought-after keynote speaker and an expert in all ECM solutions as a digital leader. You can follow Jeff on X at JWILLIE. Welcome, Jeff, to Disrupt TV.
It is great to be here, and what an honor. I mean, Ray and I have known each other for a long time. I've been following Vala for, I was probably one of your first 100,000, sort of like on LinkedIn. I was one of the first 100,000 on LinkedIn. I was one of your first 100,000 followers on, back then when we called it Twitter. Remember those?
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you so much. It's an honor to have you.
Twitter and Meerkat. We're all hanging out. Anyway.
Wow. You remember Meerkat. That's funny.
Oh, my God. It's one of our early platforms. It was kind of fun. But, hey, Jeff, you know, we've just about to launch the Constellation framework on where, you know, what you use AI for. We see it in augmentation. We see it in acceleration, automation, and serving as an advisor and advice. Those are four areas that we think about when we think about AI and AI frameworks. When we talk about future of work, where do you see this? Like, what's working? What's not? What does the landscape look like?
I've got to tell you, I'm a big acronym guy. So when you think about the four A's, as you say, augmentation, what can Gen AI do to really enhance our human capabilities, particularly in creative business fields, and it can really assist in generating new ideas, designs, solutions, thereby augmenting the whole creative process. Then when I think about acceleration, I think AI could really speed up those processes that traditionally have taken a long time, such as data analysis, research, development. Obviously, this acceleration could lead to faster innovation cycles, quicker time to market for new products and services. These are sort of like the sort of high level. When I think about automation, and actually I do this on a daily basis, these routine and repetitive tasks can be automated, freeing up human workers to focus more on those complex and strategic initiatives and activities. This can lead to obviously increased productivity and efficiency in the workplace. And then analysis. Probably I'm the least analytical guy, but with the help of AI and especially Microsoft Copilot, AI could really, you have the ability to analyze these large data sets and can uncover these insights that maybe you probably just didn't see or missed, you know, by, you know, regular human error. This can particularly be useful when I think about healthcare, finance, market research, and other data-driven decisions that are crucial.
Jeff, when you're advising CXOs, companies of all sizes, in terms of not only paying attention to AI and the variety of sciences under the AI umbrella, like natural language processing or generative AI or machine learning, computer visioning, all these different aspects, what are some of the barriers that these folks are facing when they're enthusiastically listening to you and following your advice, trying to implement and adopt AI solutions?
I look at AI as almost like teenage sex. Everyone's talking about it, but no one quite knows what to do with it. So the first thing we have to do, education and training employees to work along AI is going to be crucial. And then it really starts with the culture of the organization, right? Resistance to change, it's a barrier. It's a real thing. Employees, all you hear about they're fearing for their job displacement, or believe that AI could, you know, never replicate the new, you know, the nuances of understanding the human worker. And then overcoming this requires that culture of not only collaboration, but viewing AI as an augmentation rather than a replacement. And then the technology, right? So let's talk about the tech stack. It could be a barrier without a doubt. If the existing infrastructure doesn't really support an AI integration, or if there's a lack of in-house expertise to manage and analyze this data, these are some serious necessities before organizations are making this investment. And then finally, incentives. The lack of clear incentives for adopting AI, finding those use cases. I talk to clients on a daily basis about finding the use case. Why do we need Microsoft Copilot? Everyone's talking about it, but why do we need it, and how is it going to help me do my job?
Makes sense. No, it makes a really big difference, right? Now, one of the things that people worry about is really, is AI taking away jobs or is AI creating jobs? And right, in that equation, people can see where the takeout is, but do we see where the creation is actually of new jobs? What are you seeing in that kind of marketplace?
It's, look, Ray, there's no doubt about it. I always tell people that AI is not going to take away your job. It's the organizations that don't know about AI. Those organizations are going to take your job. It's a real thing. It's very complex. AI is likely to automate many jobs, particularly those, as I mentioned earlier, with those routine elements such as regulatory compliance, clerical work, simple data collection, and summary tasks. You know, job creation, on the other hand, AI is supposed to create new jobs. So I understand that there are going to be jobs that are eventually going to be displaced, but I see AI is creating new jobs. For example, a lot of young college students are asking me, what types of roles should I be looking for? So those AI-linked roles, such as data scientists, big data specialists, BI analysts, those are supposed to grow significantly. And then this workforce transition, right? These new jobs, with the transition to these new jobs created by AI, it's going to require workforce development and training. So the skills needed for this sort of new world that we're literally living in, these AI augmented roles will be different, but there'll be a need for professionals who could work alongside AI, leveraging those capabilities. So like I said, it's not really going to take away that many jobs, but really transfer the job landscape. I like that. Really transfer the job.
It's interesting, right? Like when we started out this conversation, not with you, but in general about AI and automation, people were like, yeah, you know, where do we automate? Where do we automate? And you're right. I think we're evolving to the conversation about when and where do you insert a human into the process? And when and where do you insert a human in this conversation? That's going to be changing the way we look at this.
Absolutely. My own experience working with clients and the research that we do to understand obstacles, data silos are common obstacle. So many systems that are not integrated. And so data is trapped in your enterprise and not being able to be accessed in a timely, relevant manner. Integration issues are challenging. Skills, these typically make the top three or four reasons. And most importantly, trust that the data is grounded, that foundational models have been tweaked to ensure accuracy and again, relevance. So, you know, as you're guiding your clients, Jeff, what are some of the guardrails that these folks need to think about? How are you advising them to ensure that, you know, the output of these great generative powerful solutions, they don't drift away from their brand promise and the core values that the company stands for?
I'm going to say one word. It's the G word. That it's not the sexy word. It's something that companies don't really like to talk about.
Governance.
Governance. Thank you. Yes, let's talk about governance, really.
So creating it sexy.
I know. No one likes to talk about governance, and it's not an amazing project, but now I've been doing more sort of, I call it get ready for AI, get ready for Copilot, get ready for whatever you want to call it, but get ready for the future of work, because it's here. I've never seen a product, I'm talking about Copilot now, that I've been in the Microsoft ecosystem for over 20 years, and Viva, the Viva Suite was released about 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, and just now it's really taking off. And when we think about Copilot, I've never seen a product within the Microsoft ecosystem that's been accelerated so much. So having those clear policies outlining what's prohibitive uses of Gen AI, particularly regarding harmful, inappropriate, misleading, or illegal content, it's out there. Talk about, back to your job question earlier, employing those in-house and external experts to conduct what we call red teaming exercises that test for those vulnerabilities and potential areas of abuse, including cybersecurity threats, societal risk, such as fairness. Let's talk about data privacy. Ray mentioned it earlier. So ensuring those controls are in place. You know, we don't want that analysis paralysis. We want it that people could use it and be helpful, but we also want it to really be, you know, again, like I said earlier, working alongside. And, you know, when I think about a lot of companies that are really kicking the tires on it around professional services, law firms, accounting firms, so that guarding that intellectual property protection, addressing the risk of those IP infringement by controlling what data is incorporated back into the training set and then preventing the use of that IP infringing content in model outputs. I would say that is right at the top of the list. And then security, obviously, against attacks. That's nothing new, but now we have to protect our data and protect against those adverse adversarial attacks, such as prompt injection attacks. Securing connections, right? So I already predicted that the word of the year, I think Ty, I don't know who does it, but I think Webster's Dictionary, I think the word of the year this year is going to be the word prompt. So having the right prompts, not regarding this particular conversation, but in general, having the right word, the prompts are really going to ensure success. I remember when Twitter first came out and people were joining Twitter and then they quit. They were Twitter quitters. Remember all those Twitter quitters? And they just didn't see value, right? So I always say, if it's not bringing value, why are we doing it? So having these guardrails are akin to safety barriers. So guiding AI toward the beneficial outcomes while preventing potential harm. Super important and essential, really, for the safe and ethical use of using Gen AI.
Jeff, do you think companies all should have chief AI officers? Is this a role that's going to rise to prominence?
It's not if, it's when. I think that what now they're probably the chief human resource officer is looking at the chief digital officer, who's looking at the chief marketing officer, who might be looking at the chief security officer, and they're all like this. My favorite emoji, right? So without a doubt, I think that goes back to having the governance. Like, let's create this role or expand on someone else's role. Let's face it, at every enterprise, whether you're 100 employees or 100,000 employees, every organization is doing more with less. Some of the top people, it breaks my heart, from some of the top organizations that we all love that Ray talks about when he's on CNBC, they're layoffs. It's not stopping. So getting more out of who we've got, that's going to be crucial for the future of work and where we are now.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the future of interactions, right? We got machine to machine, human to human, human to machine. They're all coming up there. Like, you know, what are those collisions going to look like, right? Is there serendipity among machines?
You know, my other favorite word is collaboration. I remember when I first started doing this, you know, we were calling it social business. Whoa, when we would talk to each other at work.
Social business.
What? Ooh. You know, right. And then I just changed that phrase to collaboration. And all of a sudden, the CIO, the CTO, the CMO, the chief human resource officer, they're all like, oh, yeah, we want to collaborate. We don't want to be social. So these human to human interactions are likely going to be characterized by increasing the use of natural language processing, allowing, you know, employees to communicate with machines in a more conversational manner. Right.
Machines might not want to talk to humans. We're so chatty. Like, machines are like, here. Okay, good. Hey, thanks. Yeah. They might even say thanks. They're like, oh, good job. You know, super efficient. Yeah. We love the conversation. Like, yeah, see you next time.
Yeah, that whole machine to machine learning involving you know, to make decisions without human intervention, I think that is, yes, I like to sort of get the advice from a machine, but I also want to put my two cents on it. Obviously, they're already prevalent in the industrial automation, smart homes, the IoT devices, right? Sure. So as these AI systems become more sophisticated, the machine-to-machine interactions become more complex and autonomous, handling such tasks as, you know, predictive maintenance, logistics, and energy management, especially for everyone that's got this, you know, we're living in Southern California. So solar, getting those reports on my phone, I love that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think we're going to see a very quick transition from, you know, AI agents that will inform you, then they get to know you. And then when they know you really well, they'll empower you. They will take action on your behalf. We're going from a read-only to a read-write shift in all of this. So it's pretty exciting. It's pretty
interesting. I see overall the future work with AI. It's sort of that blend, sort of like, you know, when Microsoft told everyone, hey, you're going to have to go to the cloud. And everyone was like, we're never going to go to the cloud. And of course, now you see a hybrid, you know, people are finally kicking and screaming and they're going and they're seeing the value in it. So it's the same thing with AI, sort of that blend of human creativity, machine efficiency, with that clear communication channels established to ensure that humans will remain in the loop, especially for those critical decision-making process. That's huge. And the key will be designing those systems that are not only intelligent, but transparency, trustworthy, and guess what? Easy to use.
Totally. So that, we're here with Jeff Willinger, Microsoft MVP Advisory and Digital Experience Director. You can follow him at, aren't you like the real Jay Willie or something?
Yeah. So, you know, I have to admit, I'm not as much of an X guy since the whole transition.
I see all your pickleball stuff.
I'm on Instagram. Follow me on Instagram, the real Jay Willie. I'll talk a lot about pickleball, but I also talk a lot about Microsoft technologies. And that's then awesome. I'm always, I like to be a ray of sunshine in people's lives. So I'm a pretty positive guy. What a pleasure. What an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
We're so happy to have you here. And take care. Have an amazing Friday.
Thank you, Joe. That's awesome.
That's right. The future of work is here. I can't wait to machine, man. I want my machine to talk to your machine. Maybe we won't even have to do the show. Like, our bots are going to do it.
Let's talk about future of retail. Our next guest is James Whitemore, Chief Growth Officer at Silego. Silego is number one ranked iPaaS on G2 among 236 competing solutions, Ray. I was wondering if you knew that, Ray. James here today to share more about a recent 2024 online retail trend report and what those findings mean for online retailers and e-commerce providers that are frankly struggling to meet rising consumer expectations around the globe amidst rising inflation, proliferation of purchasing options, and budget concerns that could impact the holiday 2024 sales. Silego founded that AI automation integration are critical for helping online retailers not only meet these challenges, but also capture greater consumer loyalty while competing more effectively against larger retailers, like, for example, Amazon. James brings 25 plus years of experience leading marketing organizations, both startups and big tech companies. Most recently, he was a CMO at NetApp and played a significant role in building their cloud business from really starting at zero to a 500 million plus run rate. You can follow James on X at Jay Whitemore. Welcome, James, to Disrupt TV.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. We're really excited to have you here. And commerce is one of those topics that Ball and I always get excited about. So you've got an online retail trends report. And I'm kind of curious, like, what did you find? What's changed? Because we had the post-COVID boom. We had like the pre-COVID, like, you know, hesitation. We're now in the age of AI. Give us the facts.
Yeah, it's a really interesting survey that we run. And perhaps, you know, before we get into it, just a quick qualification of why we do this. And, you know, as you said, Silego is an iPaaS platform. And I'm sure many of your viewers don't quite know what iPaaS is. iPaaS is an integration platform as a service. And if you don't kind of know what that is, think of it as modern middleware that customers use to connect their applications together with a single management plane that allows them to manage the connectivity between platforms, the data flow between platforms, and to automate workflows between platforms. And we have thousands of customers in the retail space that range from the very largest, people like Gap and Home Depot, down to kind of like, you know, some really kind of like unique niche type of online companies. e-commerce environments. But the, you know, the consistent thing is they use us to connect their storefronts with their ERP systems, with their payment gateways, with their customer data management platforms, with their third-party logistics, with outsourced return services, you know, kind of like with the glue that pulls all of those together. So, and, you know, our platform runs billions of transactions a week between those type of systems. And, you know, we feel it's our responsibility to help our customers understand what their customers are also thinking, which is why we do this research. So having said that, this latest round of research is kind of interesting because it does indicate some really strong trends between different generations of buyers. And it does illustrate very clearly where online retailers go wrong. And, you know, kind of like, and I think three key things from the research are: number one, that there's still kind of like, you know, big dissatisfaction with online retail experiences. Over 80% of consumers cite that they've had bad experiences. And typically it comes down to product descriptions not matching what was shipped. It comes down to missing shipping expectations, or feeling that kind of like they haven't gotten the best price for what they've bought. So, you know, I think those are three of the key things that you can learn from the research.
And given the fact that expectations continue to grow, and the currencies that matter most in this hyper-connected knowledge sharing economy that's more and more decentralized is personalization. So you want to make sure that what you're shipping is relevant and needed by the end user. Intelligence, speed.
Yep.
So how can retailers, and that number is stunning. So 8 out of 10 feel like companies are missing the mark.
Yep.
What do these retailers need to do in order to close that gap? I mean, you know, we have so many choices now. I mean, for me, it's almost like a one strike, two strike, and I'm going elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the same. And I think, you know, like I said, number one is you've got to make sure that the product descriptions match what is actually going to be shipped. That's the number one cause of dissatisfaction. And if you think about kind of like managing that across multiple storefronts and making sure that not just the storefronts, but also the places where people are doing their research before they actually get to a storefront, kind of like that the product information matches what's going to be shipped. That's kind of like, that's a science, kind of like, and you've got to be
all science.
You've got to be like so on top of that. The second thing I think is that you've got to, your returns process has to be as slick as your selling process. And you think about how different generations buy. I don't know kind of like how old your kids are, but I got a whole bunch of teenage and 20-year-old kids, and kind of like their standard shopping behavior is buy three, see what they like, send the rest back. I'm like, you know,
returns. Everybody loves returns.
You know, it's just not the way that I was brought up shopping. You know what I mean? But the whole returns business is just, and the way that returns, you know, work in you know, our customers' commerce engines is so important.
And I know, frictionless as much as you can, generous, meaning, you know, let's not interrogate the end user and just take the return. Knowing that digital natives, I'm a digital immigrant, but folks that were born in the mobile social cloud era, you're right. They will buy 1, 2, 3, try it, and return. And if you don't provide that, you know, minimal effort, as much frictionless process of returning, therefore the marriage experience has to be better than the courtship experience.
Yep.
Once the sale is made, you still have to earn their trust and respect and loyalty. And that means you need to be a bit more generous and be easy to do business with.
Yeah. I think maybe it's the divorce process needs to be just as good as the marriage process. returns is just a huge issue for consumers in this world.
Well, imagine if it wasn't a return, right? And that you basically was, you got to subscribe to an experience for a fleeting moment, right? And you pay for moments, right? You'd always built that into your model, and it would never be a return. It's really just a replacement. Yeah. Right. And I think we may be entering into that kind of market as we, you know, look at cars, right? Imagine you get a subscription service to a car, and what I want is like 10 weeks in a convertible, 14 weeks in like a SUV, and the rest in a sedan, right? Yeah. That would be very, very interesting on the way we look at commerce.
Think about the implications of that for online retailers and the difference between transacting a single purchase versus managing subscriptions. Yeah. And you know, it's a whole different kind of like tech stack that sits at the the back end of that. And you've got to learn platforms like Recurly and kind of like, you know, how they integrate into your ERP systems and kind of like, again, kind of like, it's just for the majority of kind of like mid-tier online retailers, it's just a whole different ball game, a different set of experiences and expertise that they need to have and build. But I think it's, the other thing you learn from the research is that kind of like, whether it's a one-time transaction or a subscription-based services, the expectation of consumers is that your brand site remains their preferred place to purchase, but right. They expect the experience to be equal or better to the large marketplaces. So you have to be able to build your branded site to the standard of an Amazon or an eBay or a Etsy or kind of like whatever other marketplaces you may be competing with. And that's a tough challenge for a lot of kind of like, mid-sized retailers.
So James, when you're dealing with these, large, regardless of size, the retailers who want to compete and win, gain market share, what are some new technologies that you believe will help these retailers get ready for the holiday season for this year and beyond?
Well, I think first up, what I'd say is number one is you've got to get your returns process to be as good as the purchasing process, and you've got to figure out whether you're going to use an outsourced service to do that or where you're going to build your own technology stack and processes and back office processes to manage that. Many of our customers, it's probably 70% of our retail customers, use an outsource service. And some of those outsourced service providers for managing returns are some of our biggest customers, just because of the volume of transactions that they process. So you've got to figure that out. Secondly, we were talking about AI earlier with Jeff and kind of like, being able to mine your customer data. Mm-hmm. Well, you've got to have a customer data management platform that is up for the task and has AI tools embedded in it, or enables you to use AI tools to really look for those kind of like next personalized offers. Mm-hmm. You've got to have the right technology to go out and compare the pricing that you are offering against your competitors, or if you're reselling others' products, what others' pricing is offered, because your pricing remains a key thing for online shoppers. The ability to do price comparisons, and for you to be able to show price comparisons on your own branded websites from other providers, that's a key thing. And then I think the next thing is referrals and recommendations and reviews, and the ability to consolidate third-party reviews onto your branded site so that people don't have to go out and do research is a key thing.
Let's go a little bit deeper, though. I want to talk about 2024. I mean, you bring this up, it's never too early to talk about the 2024 holiday season, especially in commerce, right? I mean, people are gearing up over the summer anyways, and we're almost in summer, right, as we get into June. Yep. What's it going to look like? Why do you feel it's going to be different? Because I've talked to about a dozen people, and I would say, about two-thirds of them also agree it's going to be different.
Hmm. I'm not sure if I think it's going to be different, but it's going to be, the expectations on online retailers are going to be, the bar is consistently rising, right? That we expect more. We expect personalized experiences. We expect to be offered very kind of like, things which are relevant to you. And you expect to be given the best possible pricing from whoever you choose to purchase from, whether it's a branded site or a marketplace. Mm-hmm. So that personalized pricing, that feeling of kind of like being given the best pricing. I think the way that we research products before we make a buying decision and before we decide to get to a marketplace or a branded site, that's definitely changing. And Gen Z, kind of like, you know, 90% plus of them use channels like TikTok. And, you know, if we look in our own customer base, you know, a year ago, TikTok was probably an endpoint in less than 20% of online retailers. That is growing fast as kind of like, you know, they realize that the importance of that platform specifically as a research engine, not necessarily a commerce engine, but where people go to do research. You know, and I think, you know, that makes sense, right?
It does.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing some of that.
And I have three kids at home that are, again, digital native. So TikTok is definitely in a channel that influences how they spend their time, energy, and money.
Yep, go ahead, Ray.
We're seeing this a shift, right? I mean, in the super apps that are out there, especially when you look in Asia or China, right? You buy in transaction, yep. Right? So the social media platforms are transaction engines. Here, it's not so much. I mean, you have commerce inside X or commerce inside Facebook. It's kind of like bizarre that they haven't figured it out yet. So,
I think Musk is working on that with X for sure. Yeah.
We see
it alluded to it. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's, you know, we're in a real interesting place, right? Where we see kind of like not only just the connectivity between platforms, but also the volume of transactions that take place between platforms. So we can see kind of like, you know, the volume of actual commerce transactions which are going between TikTok and an ERP system, or kind of like, you know, into a third party logistics. And you'll definitely see it increasing. Still, we see that you know, the majority of actual transactions take place in branded websites or the big marketplaces.
Yeah, there's definitely
things. So are you? I'm assuming you're using analytics across this omni-channel world where mm-hmm. the retailer is connecting to end users, and now analytics in terms of volumes help you guide, for example, customer loyalty programs that these yep. companies need to invest in order to build advocacy on the channels that matter most yep. to their end users. Can you talk about how this whole shape of customer loyalty is going to get changed? Perhaps when we were talking in the last segment, in this segment, you have these personal agents, AI agents, who are going to advise you in terms of the brands you should invest in order to enhance your street cred, as my kids say. So tell us about the future of customer loyalty powered by agents or powered by advanced analytics in real time.
Yeah, and get the right vibe too, since we're using that language.
Yeah. The right vibe. I think, kind of like, as always, it's know your audience. Kind of like, you know, the way that I interact with a brand would be very different than the way that my kids or my mom interacts with the brand, and our expectations are different. And, you know, just that whole kind of like, you know, ability to understand who you are, understand for that cohort of customers how they do their research, how they prefer to do their purchasing, what their expectations are in terms of kind of like, you know, logistics, shippings and returns, and kind of like personalize your services for it. And, you know, we help our customers kind of like, you know, build that knowledge just based on understanding of all the data flows between, you know, an average mid-size online retail company will have 17 or 18 different kind of like, you know, storefronts, and just consolidating all of that data together and understanding the purchasing patterns of different cohorts is really key. Personalization, like you say, is really important.
Imagine orchestrating 17, 18 storefronts.
Yeah.
And being able to do it fast, make sure it's personalized, and removing friction along the way, and then also capturing Net Promoter Score or CSAT or whatever metric your company uses to determine propensity to buy and loyalty and advocacy, and doing that across 18 channels. That's
a lot of work.
And that's a lot of work.
To think how you could do it without a tool set, you know, that gives you a single pane of glass. And think about kind of like, you know, the you know, think about the complexity of those environments where, for example, you know, Shopify may change something in one of their APIs, which then breaks the link into your ERP system, which then screws up your third party logistics. And suddenly kind of like, you know, the availability of inventory or pricing in Shopify doesn't match it. It is a disaster. And with a tool set like Soligo that uses AI to kind of like, you know, understand all of that and basically auto-correct those type of errors, it's so, so important. You know, our platform autocorrects 98% of errors. Sorry, Ray.
Oh, no. We're definitely going to see a lot of use of AI to look at integration patterns. Exactly. It's definitely there to help.
That's correct.
Right? And it's so many complex integrations there that require the ability. I mean, you're going to Salesforce to Snowflake back to, you know, your SAP system back to ADP to make sure you're hired the right people. I mean, you guys are sitting in the middle of that. We're here with James Whitemore, Chief Growth Officer at Soligo. You can follow him at Twitter at Jay Whitemore. Course, talking about the State of Retail 2024 Online Retail Trends Report. Check it out on their website, of course, and of course, why it matters to online retailers. Thanks a lot for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for taking the time to talk. See you soon.
Thank you, James.
Maybe see you in Denver, Boulder. So take care.
It's integration is a critical capability. And sadly, most enterprise only less than a third of applications are integrated. So we've got all these data silos that are limiting our ability to deliver value at the speed of need. Okay, our next guest, and I apologize to both Peter and Joe. I had to really shrink your bios. You've done a lot, but we only have a 20-minute segment. We have Joe Boschio and Peter Linden, co-founders of Reinvent Futures. Joe is the host of the AIH Begins advisor. He's an entrepreneur, investor, leadership roles at Microsoft and Capgemini. Joe, he co-founded innovation outreach programs and established applied innovation exchange capabilities. These initiatives brought together peer-level companies to navigate disruption, co-create new opportunities, drive meaningful change. Joe has also held advisory roles at Stanford University Disruptive Technology Lab and numerous startups, which provides him a unique perspective on navigating and adopting emerging technologies, which we've been talking about. Peter is a host and curator of the AI Age Begins event series. He's also founder of Reinvent Futures, a strategic foresight advisory firm. Peter worked with the founders of Wired magazine and ultimately served as managing editor of Wired. He then subsequently founded his own media startups, which helped actually pioneer early use of mediums like YouTube and interactive videos like Zoom. Peter has given keynotes, Ray, listen to this, almost like you, Ray, 25 years of roughly one keynote a month, which span over 50 countries. Peter, I think you're beating Ray in terms of countries. He's, again, currently founder of Reinvent Futures, where he and his team convene remarkable innovators in a range of fields impacting the future. Peter hosts the AI Age Begins, an event and media series based in San Francisco that convenes top technologists and explore the many positive ways that AI could impact the world. He's a co-author of two influential books on the future that were published in multiple languages. You can follow Peter on X at Peter, L-E-Y-D-E-N. Welcome, Peter and Joe, to the Shrub TV.
Great to be here.
Thank you both.
Hey, we're super excited to have you guys here. And you know what? I've been on the other end of your wonderful events that go on. Reinvent Futures at Shack 15, I think, has been an amazing series. And so let's talk about how you came up with this, right? I mean, what is this AI Age Begins series? And how did you guys come about thinking about setting this up?
Well, I can jump in there and just start. Yeah, and I'll tell you, when Gen AI basically hit the scene, it really surprised pretty much everybody, including a lot of AI experts that really I'd been tracking for 30 years here. I've been on the bear from the early days of Wired Magazine. And really, people really didn't think it was going to hit this fast and be this kind of accessible and also this kind of growing as fast as it is and improving as fast as it is. And so at that time, it really hit particularly around ChatGPT 4 in March of last year. We said, oh my God, we got to really do something here to bring together a meeting of the minds kind of concept of like bring together the people that really know a lot about this through my networks that I've had cultivated over 30 years in kind of Silicon Valley and the region, and Joe's background, which he can chat about, you know, bringing his kind of crew together from his thing. And he and I had actually co-hosted a previous series before the pandemic called What's Now San Francisco, that for the 5 years before the pandemic, every month we'd bring leading innovators together and have one person that would actually kind of help us think about what's happening in San Francisco now that was going to have implications in the decade ahead. And through that, we had a lot of AI people. So when this thing hit, we said, oh my God, after the pandemic, we said, let's redo it. We came together with our company here and this new series, which is booming and doing great. I don't know, Joe, if you want to add to that.
Yeah, I would just compliment that. First, let me just make sure my audio is working. Is it?
Yeah,
you're great.
All right. We cleared that hurdle. Great. So as Peter said, it was February, March last year. I was physically here at Shack 15, and you know, Cerebral Valley is kind of the new concept here in San Francisco because of this AI boom. And I was at what I believe to be the first ever OpenAI hackathon. And I spent the whole weekend here and, you know, kind of interviewing every person that was at this event. I've hosted and been a part of a lot of hackathons in my career. This was like nothing I'd ever seen because the constituency that was at this hackathon were elite grade, you know, PhDs in machine learning and, you know, senior people. And just to be able to see and witness what they were able to do and just their energy and in this extreme, you know, positivity that was around that. So Peter and I kind of quickly caucused on that and said, hey, you know, I think this is going to, we're at the beginning of something really interesting here. And a bit of what we set out to do with this series was to, you think of the name of the company, Reinvent Futures, right? A future is going to happen. How do we use this new super tool to really put incumbent leaders and future entrepreneurs into two tensions, into two questions? Question one is, are you thinking big enough, right? This tool allows you to do things that are conceivably, you know, massively transformative in a positive way. And then question two is, are you moving fast enough, right? So an incumbent organization has to really be thinking about those things and relative to their strategy and their pace of adaptation. And then, you know, we're seeing this incredible, you know, moment here from San Francisco. I'm maybe a longtime resident in San Francisco. You're starting to see this convergence of talent and capital and in a, you know, different moment. So we had a really wanted to try to pull a meeting of the minds together and get the smartest people we knew from different fields. And also to, you know, have this belief that we'll look back historically at this is a really unique moment in the history of technology. So we want to chronicle these things. We can talk more about how we do that. We have a, you know, 3-camera documentary film crew at these events. So
I'm sure there's multiple best-selling books that can come out of these incredible collaboration events that you're hosting with the best and brightest AI folks in the world. So can you answer the question, are people thinking bold enough and moving fast enough outside the ecosystem of AI experts? Are Fortune 250 companies, are mid-sized enterprise, small businesses, these folks that are supposedly going to benefit with this amazing technology to grow their businesses, are they thinking big enough? Are they moving fast enough?
I can take a quick shot at that. I mean, we don't think so. I mean, that's partly why we're kind of reframing this.
And driving this whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, what in hearing your previous guests too, you know, there's one way to approach this is kind of looking at exactly what's happening on the ground and specific things to do. What we're trying to do with this series, in many respects, this series, we do other kind of series and we do other kind of events that, but this series is really trying to put the big picture on this thing. I mean, I was here at the early Wired magazine when we were starting to think, hey, what are the implications of the internet? And if you look at the immediate impact of the internet, you know, people just trying to figure out the web and figure out what email is and stuff. Of course, it didn't really matter that much. But if you took a lens that was a decade or 25 years out, which is what we did at Wired, and in fact, in my talks and books and various things we're trying to do, you go, oh my God, it created the world that we're in today. And so what we're trying to do with this kind of series is to think, hey, we're at the beginning of an AI age. We're opening up a whole new age of humans with intelligent machines. This was the big bang, generative AI, to open it up to everybody by able to talk and interact with that computing power and that kind of those data sets in ways that before you just couldn't do except for a handful of, you know, really highly resourced, highly professional kind of companies with, you know, data scientists and the whole thing. That big bang, like the web big bang, is essentially opening up this whole new era. And what we're trying to do is get people to think big, think longer term, and really understand that we're at something really big. I think bigger than the internet. It's going to have a lot more kind of long-term implications. And so what we do, because of that, is we don't think any one person has all the answers to this. So what we're trying to do is bring together all these experts. And I mean, we have a dozen really top-tier people, including Ray. Ray was at one of ours, in which he was a speaker, where we have a question of the night, and then we go around a dozen people. They each only get 5 minutes, you know, not even the 17 minutes here kind of thing. It's like 5 minutes. It's like, boom, what is your answer to this question? What's your answer? And they come because they want to compare notes with fellow experts. We jam the whole place with 250 people, invite only folks who also know a hell of a lot. And then we roll into kind of a party afterwards to mix and match and get everyone going. But the idea here is that no one really is really thinking this through, or maybe not nobody, but so many people are not thinking big enough, and they certainly aren't moving fast enough.
Yep, I would add to it that you likely know people aren't thinking big enough quite yet, but unlike prior tech waves, like the, you know, the digital transformation wave that we've been in for the last decade or so, I think the mean time for the most senior leaders in the organization to become proficient and at least get themselves educated, the NACD, National Association of Corporate Directors, has a piece out saying, I think if the Gen AI was the fastest topic by which the boards got educated other than COVID, right? So it just shot right to the top. So the top of the organization is becoming very aware of the possibilities and the opportunities that are there. And now the rest of the organization is having to think through that. I think if you look at the trends that are occurring from an entrepreneurial standpoint, it's entering us into a new era of entrepreneurship, because now, unlike prior eras, you see founding teams that are 1, 2, 3 people because AI is your co-founder. So you need less capital to create the company. You can create the company in a faster period of time, and therefore you need a smaller addressable market, right? So there's thinking big, but there's also, you know, having to recalibrate our, you know, the overall executive leadership mindset of, you have to think about time differently, right? You can now do in 1 quarter in 2024, right, technologically, that probably took you a year in 2021 or 2022, right? So there's, I think there's a growing awareness that we need to rethink the company, but there's also a velocity of innovation and change across these constituencies that are new constituencies, right? Yeah. The Open AIs, and, you know, every week there's another $1 billion, you know, startup that we're having to fit into our calculus as to how does an organization ultimately navigate this.
Yeah, I mean, the web came out in 93. So the Amazon 94, Google 98, Salesforce 99, Alibaba 99. I'm sure it's going to take less than 6 years for people to take advantage of what we have in this new ingredient for business, Gen AI or AI in general. I'm sure 6 years from now, we're going to be talking about companies that are just, you know, game-changing companies doing incredible new capabilities as a result.
One thing, if I could just jump in there and add to that, is like one of the things that was interesting about back in the Wired days, because again, I'm old enough to kind of watch this very closely at that time and this time. What's totally different about this one, that one was essentially an infrastructure play. You were talking about a thing that, oh, we got to build the bandwidth out. Oh, we got to get wireless networks out. Oh, we got to improve these, get them down to, you know, handheld kind of supercomputers. That'll be... It was a longer play that, by definition, you could actually, as a company, work that out and think, okay, yeah, eventually we'll do that, or we'll get a little pilot going this here and there. This thing doesn't need that infrastructure. The infrastructure has already been built, including up into the cloud, all the data collected, boom, boom, boom. AI does not need an infrastructure in the next 10, 25 years to play out. It is playing out now. And so because of that, I think this is the moving fast enough. I think people are not understanding how fast this is going to hit. And again, that's the other piece of the puzzle we're trying to say there. I would just add to Joe, we also are finding, because it's how popular we're doing here, and the, you know, the corporate people that back us, we got BCG and Google and a bunch of people behind us, they are saying that they have all their kind of customers, all their kind of their kind of people they interact with. You don't have to tell that this is an important big deal to the C-suites or even the boards. And so they get it. But the question is, the whole organization has a while to go to kind of work it through it. Really work this stuff out.
Sure.
Yeah. And one of the interesting things is really the startup scene, right? We see startup scenes popping everywhere. Toronto, heavy on the math, right? Cambridge, Massachusetts, you know, robotics, automation piece. You see what's going on in New York. It's arbitrage, right? I mean, they love arbitrage. They're great at arbitrage. You know, Israel, it's cybersecurity. London and Paris, it's how do we slow down the Americans? You know, Dubai, some houses, some Web3 version of it, right? Cerebral Valley is different. Cerebral Valley is very different. We're seeing something unique there. So talk about the vibe. Talk about what's happening within the bubble of Cerebral Valley. Like, it's even different from Palo Alto. Palo Alto is kind of like, hey, we did this 10 times. We're going to do enterprise. It's easier, right? Cerebral Valley is a lot more optimistic, a lot more kind of like, we're going to build business models with AI, which sometimes sound a little wacko. So, and you're sitting right there, Joe. You're at the center of that conversation, especially in Shack 15. And Peter, you've seen it cross from Berkeley to Palo Alto and in between. What's the vibe?
You may, having been a resident of the city here for over a decade and, in the middle of this stuff for a while, it definitely is distinctively a different feel right now. I think you've got, Silicon Valley and then Cerebral Valley is, San Francisco, arguably, and Hayes Valley. And then within that, I would say Shack 15 here and a few other hotspots within the city are these interesting convergence points where you're seeing an increasingly large community of young founders, and not just young founders. Another example I'd use is Tolga Kurgulu, the former CTO of HP and CEO of Xerox PARC, is now building an AI startup focused on healthcare, right? So you're seeing these very distinguished, career players now move into, hey, you need a new system for innovation to do transformative, sector level, transformation. So you're seeing big innovation, you're seeing emergent innovation on any given night of the week. You take your pick from a dozen different extremely high quality meetups, and everyone is very collaborative, right? People aren't kind of fight against each other. It's, hey, what are you working on? How can I help? And there's no shortage of capital available and advisors. I think the pandemic put a lot of people into what I would call their post-operating or post-primary career. So you've got a lot of advisors with capital and with domain knowledge of the sectors that they're stepping in and they're helping to network. And you're seeing these movements, right? The effective accelerationist movement, right? So with any new era, we get a new era of AI, we get a new era of founder. And it's lower cost of entry, you can move fast. And I think this era of founder very much feels a duty to apply these technologies and accelerate quickly and, tackle society's more profound challenges, utilizing not just AI. I think AI, is the one technology that accelerates multiple other S-curves, right? And this era is starting to see, hey, it's the combinatory of SynBio and robotics and AI for me to ultimately go take ground on fusion, right? So there's an intensely positive energy here in my experience. And, you can't go 50 feet in San Francisco and not run into, during Climate Week, as an example, we did a big event here at Shack 15, and there was another event 15 feet away we had 300 people, they had 300 people, and then a little bit further down, ARPA-E had another 100 people. And these are, people literally, when we kick these events off, we'll ask, hey, who here has moved here in the last 6 months to focus on AI? And, a quarter, if not half of the hands will go up. So
that's awesome to hear.
Something.
Can I just one quick thing here is, because I just got back from doing a bunch of keynotes in the Heartland and out east and that stuff like that. And everyone's asking me like, oh, what's happened to San Francisco? They've got this kind of weird pandemic level, like everyone left San Francisco, nothing's happening. It's like completely missing what's really happening here. It's exploding. And that's one of the reasons, by the way, and Joe had alluded to this, we do a 3-camera shoot of this. We basically, all these 5-minute kind of talks are captured. We put it open to everyone on YouTube, or Reinvent Futures Place. We also do it in Substack under The Great Progression. We put this stuff out there. We want people to understand what's happening here. And what is happening on here is really unusual and really important. And we really want to make sure that this isn't just an insider thing. It's like everyone should be tapped into this, what's happening here today.
My last question to you both is regarding leadership challenges. My experience advising and working, collaborating with enterprise and large companies is that they tend to have like an official future vision, and they don't like to discuss things if it's not part of the official future. And all that means is that they're very married to their current processes, and they believe if they have the right talent, the existing process with right talent will serve them well in terms of growth and disruption. So 20 years ago, the official future wouldn't have an opportunity to discuss cloud computing or mobile or social or blockchain. What are some of the challenges that you see with leaders when they're thinking, experimenting, and collaborating regarding generative AI?
Well, I could do a quick hit on that. I mean, really, Reinvent Futures is essentially, at its core, essentially a strategic foresight company. The way we think about it is like we're really helping people think out the next 10 years, if not beyond that. And I've been in this business for a long time with Stuart Brand, who's legendary, and among others. And so I've learned the kind of basics. And the official future thing is a thing across almost every industry. It's people see the world from where they are. And one of the first things you got to learn about strategic foresight is get the hell out of your space and understand what's really happening out there and understand that future, that action is coming. And then
is this scenario planning that's lacking in businesses?
Well, scenario planning was one tool that corporations, including this company with Stuart Brand, Global Business Network, Peter Schwartz, others that I worked with in closely, right. is like, yes, that's one way to play scenario thinking. We don't personally do that, but I'm just trying to reemphasize what you have is the first thing to do is get the hell out of your worldview and think what's really happening out there. And that's diverse perspectives, many different people, cross-disciplinary access, tap into pioneers and innovators and understand what the world they see, and then you adjust your strategy to that.
Great.
And Joe, you see this also because Joe works with a lot of those senior people too.
Yeah, I'm, you know, in the spirit of disrupt TV, I'll throw out a challenger energy here to invite us all into is after a long career of working with companies on this notion of digital transformation, right? I have this strong conviction that the single most important variable that sets the pace of transformation of a company is the psychology of the senior team. You're disproportionately weighted to the CEO, right? So if you're going to transform in this AI era, it's an inevitability, right? And are you thinking big enough? Are you moving fast enough? But the tendency of large corporations is to, at that level, right? You don't get to that level of the senior team without being incredibly proficient at delegating and outsourcing. One thing you should not delegate or outsource is your orientation towards AI in your organization, right? So yes, you should have an AI, chief AI officer, but don't do that as a rescue mechanism and say, hey, I'm delegating or outsourcing it, because that person ultimately needs to make profoundly difficult consequential decisions that will impact the entirety of the senior team. So double down on the psychology and the proficiency of the CEO, and then just think of reference CEOs who are kind of embodying this, right? To take Elon, right? He's polarizing, but does Elon understand AI and data and automation? And is he operating
at first principle level?
Fierceness, first principle level? Will he create industries that couldn't have existed prior to this advent of
AI?
He's
not learning by analogy, right? That's for sure.
Yeah. Right. So I think that's kind of the meta challenge is don't be a victim, right? This is something that you need to figure out and choose your guide.
Super important advice. For those of us listening, please hit rewind and listen to Joe and Peter and play it on a loop for about 10, 20 times until you get what you just said. Super important. Right. Yeah, sorry to interrupt.
Real quick, you guys are techno-optimists. We have like 30 seconds. What are you optimistic about, Peter?
I think people totally underestimate how we are on the verge of a great age of the next 25 years is going to be an era of great progress, not just AI, but we've got clean energies, we've got bioengineering, we've got all these amazing tools that humans have never had before. And just watch out as this thing just totally changes what humans can do in the next 25 years. It's completely underestimated.
Awesome. Humanity will save itself from a culture of scarcity to a culture of abundance. Joe, what about you?
I always use this example of, do you remember the SpaceX autonomous ship, a rocket that lands on a drone ship out at sea? That thing's like 7 years old. Right. Buzz Aldrin on his best day probably couldn't stick that landing with perfect weather conditions. Right. So it would be inhumane. It's beyond human to think about a human landing that thing. Well, that same thing is coming to healthcare, law, software development, education, etc. Right.
Where
capacity to have those things is inevitable. And when you bring that to education and healthcare, it's it can't not be an amazingly good thing.
Putting words in Joe's mouth, exponential thinking is here. We're here with Joe Baggio, Peter Layden, co-founders of Reinvent Futures. You can follow Peter at Peter Layden. And Joe, I think you have a Twitter handle. I got to go find that.
At Bojo Joe.
Bojo Joe, yes. Baggio Joe.
Thank you for what both do. Thank you. You're bringing awareness to masses. Thank you for what you do.
Happy Friday. Maybe see you in the green room. Take care.
Thank you both. How can you not be optimistic when you talk to folks like Peter and Charlie?
It's impossible.
And James. It's pretty, pretty amazing.
We'll see them in the green room. So.
I've been traveling for a bit, and this is my favorite thing I do weekly, monthly, annually. So it's great to be back with you, Ray. And next week, fasten your seatbelts, bring your popcorn. We have Caroline Wong, Chief Strategy Officer at Cobalt.
Oh, wow, Cobalt.
We have Joe Davis, Managing Director, Senior Partner at the Boston Consulting Group and the author of Generous Leader. All of us need to be that. And lastly, we have Loretta Napoleoni, author of Techno-Capitalism, The Rise of the New Robber Barons and the Fight for the Common Good.
That's exciting, actually. That's awesome.
I also want to say, Ray and I have been working on a special episode that's coming in the, towards the end of the month, May 29th, I believe is the date we have. As you know, Boston is the city of champions. I know I'm going to get a lot of flack for that. But Ray and I in person are going to be with the CIOs of the Boston Celtics, the Boston Red Sox, the New England Patriots, the Boston Bruins, and the Boston Revolution. Five of the pro teams, technology leaders on their one roof in person at the Celtics headquarters, special edition of Disrupt TV. So definitely want to bring your popcorns and fasten your seatbelts for that. Ray, final thoughts.
We might do it dinner there. Well, hey, look.
Yeah, for those, for those of you who are Boston, local to Boston, let us know. Send Ray myself on X, on LinkedIn, if you have interest potentially joining us for dinner.
Together. So, hey, thanks everyone. And yeah, look, it's about acceleration, augmentation. We're going to see automation and see AI provide a world of advice. We saw it in the future of work. We talked a little bit about where commerce was going, but more importantly, it's going to be a bright future. So if it's Friday, it's Disrupt TV. We'll see you guys 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, and see you next week.
Thank you, everyone.